The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
China has completely de-emphasized privacy and freedom of movement during the pandemic. In the brain of Shanghai's Pudong district, every suspected COVID-19 case is monitored.
We installed a network of sensors in front of apartments. When the door sensor registers people leaving the apartment in violation of the rules, we're alerted. District staff and the health department are then informed and can respond quickly.
What's technologically possible is carried out with little regard for people's privacy. Criticism or resistance among the population is virtually non-existent.
Hello and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, or the Trumpet Daily Show. We're on video as well, as you can see here. This is Richard Palmer standing in for your regular host, Mr. Stephen Flurry. We'll get to talking a little bit more about some chilling things that are going on in China and how their COVID surveillance is being repurposed to crack down on anyone and everyone they want to in just a minute. But first, I'd like to welcome you to the show, no matter how you're joining, whether you're watching us through the live video on the Trumpet website. Hopefully that's working. I think we did have a few technical difficulties in the run-up to today, but I believe we should be going now. I see myself on there. We are going. Excellent. And on Facebook, we'll be up live, and on our CRN Digital Talk Radio, it goes out on Channel 3, Channel 6 on repeat over the air, of course, on 101.3 on the FM dial, and all of our shows are available on kpcg.fm if you want to catch up after the fact, or on thetrumpet.com for the video. However you're listening, whenever you're listening, we're very glad to have you with us. And I want to start today by talking about this. Coffee. Or in my case, actually water. I was going to make a cup of tea before the show, but with some of the technical things, I ran out of a bit of a time. But is your coffee spying on you? It's a weird question. Surprisingly, just today, I have seen several news articles on this subject. It's a bit of an odd subject to see a few coincidental stories on, but it does drive home an important point, just how capable technology is making governments of spying, surveillance, and even tyranny. We have an article up on our website right now called Tim Horton's App Caught Spying on Canadians. Those of you, if you've not been to Canada, Tim Horton's is something like Canadian religion. You know, if you drive around a city in the States and think that there's a lot of Starbucks everywhere, you just go to Canada and drive around a city there. It is astonishing how many Tim Hortons there. I don't know why you need a coffee and donut shop on literally every corner, but apparently to Canadians you do. But Tim Hortons has been caught not just existing on every street corner, but spying on its customers. Like a whole load of different retailers, Starbucks included, but a whole bunch of others. They have an app that you can download. And this app makes it very convenient. You can order coffee through the app. You can show up, boom, your coffee is ready. You've paid for it already via the app. Pick it up and go. And you can get your Timbits very quickly. But there's been a pretty astonishing discovery about this. James McLeod, he wrote an article for the Financial Post on how he unveiled this, and our article on our website as well goes through these details here, where this individual discovered Tim Hortons spying on him. This Tim Hortons app spying on him. He wrote, from my home to my office to a Blue Jays game at Rogers Center, even all the way to Morocco when I traveled on vacation last June, the company's app silently logged my coordinates and relayed them back to its corporate servers. According to the data Tim Hortons had recorded my longitude and latitude coordinates more than 2,700 times in less than 5 months, and not just when I was using the app. And the article goes through all kinds of pretty astonishing specifics because he was able to put in a Freedom of Information request and get back from Tim Hortons all of the information it had on him. Tim Hortons had figured out his home. They knew exactly when he was traveling. They were getting his apps were sending alerts, basically saying, all right, he's going on vacation now, because they knew when he was traveling a long distance from his home. He talked about how he knew where he was when he was staying at his parents' home, which was an entire 20 minutes from the nearest Tim Hortons, so somewhere incredibly remote there. This coffee company knew his every detail. So obviously the solution is to brew your coffee at home if you don't want to be tracked like this, right? Well, no. The trouble is your coffee maker might be spying on you as well. I saw this story this morning. This is from the Washington Times. Strange brew. Americans warned of China possibly spying through smart coffee makers. So you know, you get your cup of joe at home, you could still be being spied on. This Washington Times article says American researcher Christopher Balding says he uncovered evidence that China is devouring data collected through smart coffee machines made in the communist country. China is really collecting data on just just anything and everything, Mr. Balding said. As a manufacturing hub of the world, they can put this capability in all kinds of devices that go out all over the world. So it's smart homes now, too. A lot of these devices made with very little security. Now, these particular brand of coffee machines are made by a company called Kalem, I guess is how you pronounce it. It doesn't seem like a super popular brand. I had a look on Amazon.com. I couldn't see any Kalem-branded coffee machines available on that website. I think they do market more to hotels and into business rather than to the consumer market. In some ways, that makes it even more worrying, though, because it means they're spying on, surveilling a much wider range of people. There's potential even for them to be collecting payment information if they're into the commercial space. But it is amazing how much we're being spied on. And obviously, the only solution is to drink tea. You never see stories about teapots spying on you, or tea bags. Just kidding. Obviously, it's not coffee. It's not just coffee makers. It's one example that just shows the potential for this subject. Just how much this, all kinds of data is so deeply embedded into our lives. Think about how many apps people tend to have on a smartphone, and You read all kinds of stories all over from what they're doing. It really is shocking sometimes when you get into the details of what some of these different smartphone apps do. I think I read about one. It was developed for people going to the mall, and it would track people throughout the mall. It could use your Bluetooth to know, okay, he's standing in front of this store for a while, or he's looking at this particular store, or even this particular part of the store. Well, we can send him offers on this product. Because we know exactly where he's standing, what he's looking at. In fact, let's change what's on that billboard based on the people that are in front of that billboard, because we're tracking them through their smartphones. And people just put anything on there, free games or whatever. It's a free app, just download it. Nobody looks into the conditions. There was a story a few years ago, I remember as well, about a guy in London who just put up a free Wi-Fi point. And then, typically if you sign on to a public Wi-Fi, there are often lots and lots of terms and conditions you have to agree to. And one of these terms that he put in there is, by using this Wi-Fi, you're agreeing to hand me your firstborn child. And quite a few people signed up for that. And of course, nobody noticed this request. I mean, this condition. That is obviously not legally enforceable. But the point is, and his point was, there's so much small print attached to all of these things, nobody notices them. We had another article up on our website earlier this week, our smartphones are spying on us. I think that went up on Monday on the Trumpet website. And that was talking about, okay, well, we've got the 2000 Mules movie. And obviously the most important thing that movie has done is shone a spotlight on the election theft, on the election steal that people just don't want to talk about it, has finally gotten people talking about it. But just as a side point, watching that, it's also revealing about how much data is out there. Again, I kind of feel like I was fairly clued in on some of this tracking, but I didn't realize just how you can, you know, you can go to a private company and buy data from thousands of people. It's just all up for sale, and it showed how much people can track that data, how much data is out there to buy. That article just went over some of the ways the government had been caught misusing data in the past. The IRS, for example, was buying. They were doing the same thing that they did on 2,000 Mules, going and buying up people's data so that they could try and trawl through that and look for areas where they might be potentially committing tax fraud. I guess they can get your location data, and if you say you're unemployed, but your location data shows you leaving at 9 and coming back at 5 every day and going to the same place, maybe they can catch you working. I mean, you know, like this. I mean, the article makes the point. Nobody's in favor of tax fraud, but governments getting around constitutional limits, getting around legal limits about how much they're allowed to spy on their own citizens, and it's affecting thousands of people, that is worrying. And you look at the IRS in particular and the way that they have singled out conservatives, for example, harassed conservatives, and deliberately gone out of the way to target, say, conservative groups. And then you look at them bypassing some of these, breaking the law to maybe sugarcoat it less. Then you've got to be concerned about them, what they could be doing with all of this data. Several U.S. senators even spoke out about what the IRS was doing at the time. Ron Wyden and Elizabeth Warren. So certainly not people you would think of from the, say, the libertarian wing of the Republican Party. They wrote a letter saying, "The IRS is not above the law, and the agency's lawyers should never provide IRS-CI investigators with permission to bypass the courts and engage in warrantless surveillance of Americans." You see the FBI now using mobile phones to track the January 6th rioters, where they're, again, using exactly the same kind of thing, trawling through all of these location data, tracking people down, getting a list of everybody who was in the vicinity, and then using that to go after them. And that's just the phones. We get back to the coffee machine itself, and we're moving more into the smart home, Internet of Things, where your fridge is online, your TV is online, you know, everything. And there are huge concerns with that. I mean, in some ways, it's a bit of a funny story, the coffee one. Is your coffee machine spying on you? You know, it can kind of be easy to think, all right, the Chinese government knows how I like my coffee in the morning. And maybe they know what time I like my coffee in the morning. I'm sure that's fascinating, riveting information for Xi Jinping. You know, so what? Like I said, well, some are commercial machines, so they might be able to get credit card data through there. But you put it in the picture of what kind of things are being made smart in the home, and it does become a lot more worrying. I read you that quote from Mr. Balding saying that China is getting data on anything and everything. This Washington Times article goes on to talk about how, well, a lot of these devices are connected to smartphones. So if some of these are compromised by the Chinese Communist Party and then they're talking to your smartphone, can they use that to get data from your smartphone, which of course has a microphone, has a camera, is with you all the time, and pass that on to the Chinese Communist Party? It goes on to say some robotic vacuums use microphones to respond to users' commands. The vacuums can be controlled with apps available through Apple and Google App Store. Last year, the cybersecurity firm Mandiant said it uncovered a vulnerability in baby monitors and video doorbells that used the ThruTech Kale network, which might have allowed hackers to access live audio and video. Internet-connected cameras, they're kind of everywhere. There have been many scandals. I mean, if you've got an older internet-connected camera and you've not updated the firmware on that, that's probably something you should look at reasonably urgently. I mean, these things are, depending on what brand it is, but it's so cheap to buy some of these internet-connected cameras. And with crime rising, you know, it makes a good investment in some ways. It's a way to try and help secure your home and watch over things while you're not there. A lot of these different, and it all depends. I mean, there's some brands that are pretty solid. There are some brands that are not. But there are so many brands that are just cheap cameras made in China, and the security on them is horrible. or they've got firmware that's 5-6 years old and it's been thoroughly compromised, but it's still shipping with sometimes ancient firmware, this kind of thing. And China's heavily invested into this in this industry. How much of just video surveillance from people's homes, microphone surveillance, are they able to get? And then, like that quote talks about, well, how secure is the microphone in your robot vacuum cleaner if that's what you've got? You know, there's these big devices that people tend to have with microphones in, you know, like the Google Hub or the Amazon Alexa, or you know, whatever, the smartphone, smart speaker type of things. And they've been caught doing some dodgy stuff with their data. But you know, maybe there's a modicum of security with some of those, that they're big companies. If they do anything too evil, they can have their reputation damaged. And I don't know how much protection that really is. They've already been caught abusing these things. But you compare that to some kind of no-name brand Chinese electronics thing that might sell robot vacuum cleaners with a microphone. Well, you know, they don't really have a reputation to protect. And there's all kinds of dodgy things they may be doing with that. So a lot of this technology could be easily misused. And this week we also saw an example of that. China is having some problems with their banking industry. There's quite a large number of people that have had their bank accounts frozen. There's several billion in these bank accounts that people just cannot access. And understandably, they're pretty annoyed at this. People like having access to their money. Strange, but there it is. So there have been growing protests outside Chinese banks. I found a clip of one of these protests online. I don't know whether it's quite from the most reliable, or it's not from necessarily a huge TV station. It's a bit amateurish, but it's still very interesting to see some of these clips that, of course, the Chinese government tries to clamp down on. But here's one of the protests outside these banks.
A growing number of Chinese people now feel that it is getting harder to get cash out of their banks. This 80-year-old woman is being carried to the bank by her family because banks require that money transfers must be done in person.
She's carried to the bank to transfer money, okay? She's carried to the bank to transfer money.
The Chinese possess the spirit of not fearing hardship and enduring it, but the current situation is breaking their bottom line. That is, their money in the bank is gone, and it's not a small amount.
So lots of angry people wanting their money. So they've got these protests. The Chinese government doesn't want these protests outside the banks. This week there was planned to be a big protest outside some of these banks in a particular province. Lots of people were going to travel in and protest and try and get access to their money. And then the Chinese government shut it down at the touch of a button. Because just like the left want to introduce in Britain, in America, just like Europe introduced across the country, across the continent, in China you need a vaccine passport to travel and to engage in just a lot of business. It's called, you need to have a green code, I think it's called in China, on your phone. Your green code because you're vaccinated or whatever, I'm not sure exactly what you need to get a green code, but you're good to travel. And all of a sudden, all these people that were planning to protest, well, their COVID pass, their green code suddenly turned red and they couldn't travel. They were stuck outside the city. They couldn't come in and protest. Reuters had an article on this. China's bank protests stopped by health codes turning red, depositors say. This article says right groups have warned China could use its vast COVID surveillance infrastructure to stifle dissent. Without a green code on their smartphone app, citizens lose access to public transport and spaces such as restaurants and malls, as well as the right to travel across the country. They're putting digital handcuffs on us, said a depositor from Sichuan province named Chen, who declined to use his full name for fear of government retribution. And then there was another person who also didn't want to give his name, said his child may not be able to go to school if his code does not soon revert to green. I can't do anything. I can't go anywhere. You're treated as though you're a criminal. So just as a touch of the button, and Reuters kind of goes through and talks about how there were other people that were traveling into the same city but not planning on being part of these protests didn't have this problem with their passes suddenly turning red. It was just this great crowd of people that were going in there to protest. So the Chinese government, they knew who had been to previous protests. They knew who had their deposits at these banks. And they were able to just target those individuals and say, nope, you cannot travel. And they used this COVID pass, it seems, to put the clamp down on people, or just to shut down this protest completely. This is just a clip from China Insider on what this kind of surveillance means.
If this is true, well, China has successfully used its version of the COVID passport to control the lives of its citizens everywhere, including restricting them from accessing their own money.
And this is exactly what people were warning would happen, that people would use COVID passports to just control every aspect of people's lives, like you heard in that clip. And perhaps the scariest thing to think about is it's not too hard to imagine something like that happening in your country, happening in Britain, happening in America. The government in America right now is already using cell phone data and mobile phone data to find out who was at a protest they didn't like and arrest them. Now, it's easy to imagine. Say you had some other January 6th type of protest where the government doesn't like, the radical left doesn't like. If they had managed to put in place COVID passports, easy to imagine them saying, well, this protest is a public health emergency. It's a threat to our democracy. We need to shut it down using whatever means necessary. So we'll just turn everybody's COVID passes red. Or just do like the Chinese government and just do it and say nothing. And I mean, who in the US media would really question that? It's a fascinating way modern technology is just making worse tyranny more and more feasible. I mean, you can kind of look back in the Soviet Union, Joseph Stalin, things like that were certainly bad enough, and entire populations living in fear, but they didn't kind of have this, they didn't have access to cameras inside people's homes and tracking devices that traveled with just most people going wherever they went, allowing them to track them down. It's paving the way, or potentially allowing a really granulated level of detail in surveillance. We had an article all the way back in 2014 from Mr. Robert Morley. Is the government reading your email? And he just talked about how, well, he talked about some of the news from back then and about how nobody really cared. And he said, well, perhaps most of the people being targeted by agents at the NSA and other law enforcement agencies are actually threats to the US, but the larger problem is that these agencies are expanding rapidly under an administration that actually disdains the law that it is sworn to uphold. You know, a whole lot of this surveillance that was put in place all happened under President Barack Obama. I think that's got to be cause for concern when you look at all the lawlessness that administration was into, especially when you look at the spiritual reality behind that administration. And they were the ones that were doing, I mean, they're not the only ones. There was a lot going on with the Patriot Act and things like that before then. But a lot of this surveillance was dramatically expanded under him. Why was that? But he makes a powerful point here, Mr. Morley does. Throughout most of its history, America has enjoyed a level of freedom unparalleled in the human experience. We've not suffered the turmoil that many other nations have. As a result, many people are oblivious to what is really happening around us. Most think the American experience is the norm. They don't know what it's like to live in the rest of the world, and they don't see the danger in giving up their constitutional freedoms. They say things like, I know the government is spying on me, but what does it matter as long as I'm not breaking the law? And he's right that so many people really don't care. You know, we've made it easier and easier for the government to abuse this kind of power, and we've probably all been complacent to some degree on this, that it's just so easy to just, oh, I'll download that app. I mean, sure, there's some risk, but I can get my coffee quickly. It allows me to get my donuts, find out where my nearest donuts are so conveniently. I think back when I had a smartphone, I think I succumbed to that mindset to a certain extent. And it's so easy to ignore the dangers because our countries have been protected from those dangers for so long. Well, we'll take a quick break. We'll talk when we get back a bit more about just the spiritual reality behind this surveillance state. We'll also talk about some developments between Europe and Israel. And we'll talk about the way that our countries, Britain, America, the whole West, has turned their back on the basic laws of cause and effect. Thanks for joining us, and we will be right back after this break.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. The developed nations have made awesome progress. They have produced a highly mechanized world, providing every luxury, modern convenience, and means of pleasure. Yet they are cursed with crime, violence, injustice, sickness and disease, broken homes and families. At the same time, more than one half the world is living in illiteracy, abject poverty, filth and squalor. Violence and destruction are rapidly multiplying. Many ask, why, if God exists, does He allow so much violence and human suffering? To understand the reason behind this astonishing paradox, request a complimentary copy of Mystery of the Ages. We were born into this 20th century world as it is. We take it for granted, but we can't explain it. It's like viewing a movie at a point already near the end. We see what is occurring at that point, but not having seen it from the beginning and not knowing how events developed to the point of viewing, we simply cannot understand what we are seeing. Mystery of the Ages transports you back to the beginning of the movie, to the foundation of this present evil world. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily.
Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily radio show. I just want to finish up what we were talking about in that first half about, is your coffee spying on you? We just left off talking about how most people just really don't see much danger behind this. So I think it's something that it's easy to necessarily be worried about, but then not necessarily do anything about, because it's so convenient, some of these things that we let spy on us. But Trumpet Editor-in-Chief Gerald Flurry, he wrote, well, this is a quote from the America Under Attack book. He said, government tyranny is routine in human history. Let's not be naive and think something like that could never happen here. Our forefathers weren't stupid. They wanted to guarantee America's freedom. They knew that God was a God of freedom. He wants us to be free. That's a gift from God, and they understood that. So there was an understanding there that freedom was rare, that it's easy to have difficulties and problems here. And, you know, really we can see, and that as that book goes into, the America Under Attack booklet, there's a spiritual reality now where so much of that freedom is under attack, that the freedom, the prosperity that Britain and America received, that was a gift from God, a blessing from God, that that got poured out upon our nations, and we've benefited tremendously from that. But we've not been grateful for that. We've not thanked God for that. We've not looked to God. We've just completely done our own thing, and that blessing and those protections are being removed. And now our nations are under attack. And that freedom that we've enjoyed as a blessing, that protection from tyranny that we've enjoyed as a blessing, well, that's being withdrawn now. And God is allowing, even, you know, if you believe the Bible talks a lot about evil spiritual forces, about Satan the devil. God is allowing Satan's attack. He's allowing Satan to bring our nations down. And 2 Kings chapter 14 describes the result of this kind of attack. It says, for the Lord saw the affliction of Israel, that it was very bitter, for there was not any shut up, nor any left, nor any helper for Israel. And the Lord said not that he would blot out the name of Israel from under heaven, but saved them by the hand of Jeroboam, the son of Joash. You know, you look at the potential that there is for tyranny in all of this different spying and these different technologies, you really see this, you know, bitter affliction, and you really see the way that it takes a miracle to save us. It takes God's intervention to save us. I mean, think about how much power this potentially gives a government. A really strong potential for tyranny, but It's only a temporary saving. There's, you know, God is giving us a last opportunity to turn to Him, to learn, to listen to Him. And if we don't, worse tyranny is coming. This time, not from at home, but from abroad. And God is raising up a foreign power, as even as America destroys itself from within. I'm sure they're very likely to use some of these same kind of technologies to crack down. And the Bible talks about them enforcing their religion on everyone that they dominate. So we have an opportunity to turn to Him, but there's these, you know, the potential for tyranny is really building for good reason. And our book, America Under Attack, will really go in and show you exactly why God is allowing this attack, why this attack is going on, when it started. I mean, all of the who, what, when, and whys, and all of those details. And we have an updated version of that America Under Attack booklet, like you've been hearing about on this show. We're super excited to be able to get that out. I believe it has gone to the press now. So just keep watching our website, keep watching that space, and we will post it. I think we'll be able to read it online there pretty soon. And keep subscribed to our Trumpet magazine as well if you want to get all the latest updates. I think in the next Trumpet print, I believe we're planning to have some advertisements on that, a leading article from Mr. Gerald Flurry on that new booklet. So really watch for that booklet. That is going to help answer, help you see what is going on, why a loving God is allowing this to happen, what the solution is. For you individually, for the nation, where there is hope in the future. So you can get a subscription to that Trumpet magazine. You can order that book when it comes out by going to our website, thetrumpet.com. You can sign up to a free subscription and then you get a free print magazine in the post every month or so. Very happy to send that to you. You can do that at our website, thetrumpet.com. You can give us a call if you don't, if you're not online, if you're not into all of these smart devices. That's probably a good thing in a lot of ways. But you can give us a call, 1-866-930-3024. That's our free phone number in the United States. We have other phone numbers abroad. They're listed on our website. Maybe if you can't get that, maybe you can get a friend or family member to help you look up some of those phone numbers. But a real potential for tyranny growing. I wanted to spend a few minutes just talking about a different news article here where we're having several high-profile visits from people in the EU going into Israel this week. They're kind of new best buddies. You had the Italian Prime Minister Mario Draghi was over there. The European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen were both there, both meeting with very senior Israeli leaders. There's a very prophetic story here as well that we need to watch. Just to give you a bit of a flavor of this visit, here's a clip with some of Ursula von der Leyen's meetings with the Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett.
Over the last year, we rejuvenated Israel's ties with our neighbors in the region. We want to build bridges to peace. We repositioned climate change on Israel's agenda and made it a national priority. And we redefined Israel's place in the global community. And I'm happy to say that today Israel and Europe are in a very strong and positive trajectory. Trade, innovation, economic cooperation are soaring. We're witnessing our partnership reach new heights. The Jewish people in Europe share a long history. Today we can look forward knowing that Europe is in the hands of leaders such as yourself who understand the weight and the responsibility and take firm action in the face of anti-Semitism. Your words today at the Ben-Gurion University were powerful. You said Israel and Europe are bound to be friends and allies because the history of Europe is the history of the Jewish people. I could not agree more.
So we have some highlights and Naftali Bennett talking about how close the EU and Israel are. Ursula von der Leyen and Mario Draghi, they were both saying similar things. But Melanie Phillips had a very good article on this called The EU's Charm Offensive. And she made some really good points about this European-Israeli relationship. But in that article, she began, "People dining this week on the charming terrace at Jerusalem's King David Hotel were surprised to find at the next table Ursula von der Leyen, President of the European Commission. Given the EU's long-standing hostility towards Israel, it was a bit like spotting Amber Heard knocking back the tequila with Johnny Depp in a Los Angeles bar." I guess it's hard to escape that news story even when talking about the EU and Israel. So quite the turnaround in this relationship. These two aren't particularly known for being good buddies. The EU is not a particularly strong supporter of Israel. They tend to side with the Palestinians in a whole host of different ways. Yet here all of these leaders were talking about how close they were together, how much they loved each other. Why the change? Well, Europe wants gas. That's the big deal here. And it's a really fascinating twist to this relationship where, okay, well, now Europe has been cutting off gas from Russia, saying, well, we don't want to buy fuel from Russia. But then with this story, the EU has been, now what's been happening just over this last week is Russia's been turning around and saying, well, maybe we don't want to sell you gas anyway, and been threatening to boycott Europe and refuse to sell gas to Europe. This has got Europe very worried. How do we heat our homes in the winter? How do we generate electricity in the winter? So they've been going then on this desperate shopping spree, trying to find other countries to buy gas from. And one of the most promising is Israel. It's an interesting conundrum because it's the Middle East and North Africa that has a whole lot of gas, but so many of these other countries are unstable. You know, they'd love to get more resources out of Nigeria, and there's a plan to build a trans-Saharan pipeline coming up through Algeria. But there's problems with Algeria. Algeria has an argument with Morocco and West Sahara, and Spain's not sure which side of the argument they want to be on, and now they've offended Algeria. They've got all of this. You know, Libya has a lot of resources. Libya's also a mess. But Israel, rich, prosperous, stable, they're a great candidate for the EU to start buying up more gas from. So one of the deals that they worked out during this trip is that there'll be gas from Israeli fields will go to Egypt. Egypt has plants then where they can liquefy it and turn it to liquefied natural gas, and then they can ship this to Europe. And that's a way to kind of immediately start to fill some of the backlog. Then there's longer term plans to potentially build a new pipeline under the sea going to Europe. There's a few different options for this. There's also a few different complications. The Biden administration America used to support this. The Biden administration withdrew that support, but now Europe is stepping in and they're quite keen on this. They're even going as far now as supporting Israel in a dispute with Lebanon over who owns which part of the Mediterranean Sea and who owns some crucial undersea gas fields, which again, from Europe's self-interested point of view, makes a lot of sense. If you want to buy gas from somebody, who do you want to buy it from? You know, Hezbollah, Lebanon, this country that keeps falling apart into civil war and where none of your workers will potentially be safe, or Israel? They'd much rather buy that from Israel, so they'd much rather Israel be the one that owns this particular part of the ocean. But I thought Melanie Phillips just made some excellent points here. She said, so does this mean the EU is now changing its attitude to Israel? Until now, it has been hostile. It promotes the Palestinian narrative that seeks to delegitimize Israel through lies about its illegal settlements and alleged Israeli Defense Force aggression. It funds NGOs devoted to harming and destroying Israel. In an aggressive move in 2015 against Israeli occupation of the disputed terrorists, it started to label products from the West Bank. And what she goes on to say is, well, despite all of this charm offensive, there's nothing really substantive that Israel is changing about all of these attitudes. They mentioned that on the same day that they're having this, you know, lovey-dovey press conference with Naftali Bennett, on the same day, Ursula von der Leyen is also meeting with the Palestinian prime minister and announcing that they're going to give the Palestinians over 200 million euros. This was 200 million euros the EU was refusing to give before because Palestinian textbooks encourage Palestinian kids to murder Israelis. Palestinian textbooks are astonishingly bad. It's something it's very easy to get worked up about because they just take, you know, it's like you start doing math textbooks for five-year-olds and it's like, well, the heroic Palestinian martyr killed 3 Israelis on one day and 5 Israelis the next day. How many Israelis did our heroic Palestinian fighter kill? It's just a horrific amount of hate being poured into minds too young to be able to know and to resist this hate. But the EU stopped or they froze the funding. Palestinians didn't change a thing, but now they're getting all of this back again so that they can indoctrinate their young children into killing Jews. And it talks about how, while they, you know, Ursula von der Leyen goes to this press conference, she boasts about putting fighting anti-Semitism at the core of the European Commission's agenda, and at the same time funding groups that kill Israelis. You know, the EU is funding these NGOs, non-government organizations, that act on behalf of people like the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine. They're terrorist groups. So, yeah, they pledge, they say, well, we're going to fight anti-Semitism, and then they fund terrorist groups. Melanie Phillips writes, the Europeans are playing the double game so familiar in the West, pledging support for the Jewish people while empowering Israel's mortal enemies. Now the global energy crisis is producing a further double game, supporting Israel when it supplies the Europeans with essentials while abandoning Israel in its defense against its external foes. She also goes on to say, Melanie Phillips focuses in on a couple of quotes from Ursula von der Leyen, where she said, Europe and Israel are bound to be friends and allies because the history of Europe is the history of the Jewish people. Melanie Phillips writes, this was an extraordinary thing to say. The history of the Jews in Europe is one of centuries of murderous persecution, mass conversions, hideous pogroms, and eventually the Holocaust. Historically, Europe was the epicenter of anti-Semitism, was described by Israel's first prime minister, David Ben-Gurion, as the graveyard of the Jewish people. Yet von der Leyen implied instead that Europe has always been bound together in friendship with the Jewish people. No less startling was that Bennett chose to agree with her. You said, Israel and Europe are bound to be friends and allies because the history of Europe is the history of the Jewish people. I could not agree more, he said. And then Melanie Phillips asked, was Bennett choosing to accept her revisionism in the interest of better relations with the EU? His eagerness for such a development is understandable, but no Jewish leader should ever connive at sanitizing Jewish persecution. Like I said, this whole dynamic is just fascinating because it's such a specific fulfillment of Bible prophecy. We have a book, Jerusalem in Prophecy, that you can read on our website, that you can write to us. I'll give you those phone numbers again in just a minute. That talks about this prophesied dynamic, that Europe would pretend to be Israel's friend, and the Ukrainian invasion now is giving Europe yet another reason to pretend to be Israel's friend, and then double cross, use that friendship to betray Israel. And you see that same dynamic already in Europe's relationship with Israel, pretending to be friends when it benefits them, all the while hurting, double crossing, lying. It's a dynamic that is exactly prophesied in the Bible, this betrayal. So that booklet, Jerusalem in Prophecy, you can get that on our website, like I said, thetrumpet.com. And that free phone number again is 1-866-930-3024. That will take you through the prophecies that talk about, and that will show you how the Bible talks about a European military force, maybe a peacekeeping force, being invited right into the heart of Israel, right to Jerusalem, surrounding Jerusalem, and then betraying them, helping take over that land, and many, many other prophecies. So it's just a profound fulfillment of that. Even already, you can see in spirit that relationship. So understand those prophecies, read that prophecies, that will help show just another way that all these Bible prophecies are being fulfilled right now. Well, the final story I wanted to talk about, I think this is just a fascinating dynamic to think about, where I don't think you need me to tell you that prices everywhere are going up. I mentioned last time I was on the show, I think the big headline was in the UK, it was now costing more than £100 to fill up the average family car. In the US now, petrol prices passed $5 a gallon. I kind of joke with Americans, oh, I wish our fuel was $5 a gallon. At the same time, in some ways, you know, over in the UK, when they go up from, I don't know, £1.50 a litre to £2 a litre, that's a 25% increase. In America, it seems like it's more than doubled, going from, I can't remember where it was, but $2-ish a gallon to five. Percentage terms, that's an even bigger increase. And then a lot of people do just need to drive a lot more. They live further from their work, that kind of thing. But it's causing real pain. Inflation is at 8.5%. The average rent is up nearly 20% to a record high. Over $1,800 in April. You see all these costs soaring everywhere. To me, one of the most surprising things about this is that people are surprised. I should have thought to grab the soundbite. I didn't, but we had Janet Yellen last week saying, well, I didn't see this coming. I didn't expect this inflation. And you've got so many of these experts, so-called experts, having this long track record of not seeing any inflation coming. All of these different people at the Fed, at the Treasury, saying, no inflation. Which is insane, because the US has spent the last 2 years printing money like there's no tomorrow. You've got somewhere very roughly in the region of half of all US dollars in existence created during the pandemic. You know, the government did the digital equivalent of printing money and then handing out about $3,200 in stimulus checks to every adult. You know, here in the UK, the government printed money and used that to pay people to sit at home and do nothing. That was government policy during COVID here. What on earth did the experts expect to happen? Printing money and paying people to do nothing, or just printing money and giving it to everybody. You know, we stop working for a year and we're surprised that we run out of stuff. We print money and we're shocked to see money losing its value. You know, this isn't even basic economics. It's just common sense. But this mistake, it's a symptom of just one of the biggest problems that afflicts our societies. This fatal weakness that can even rub off on us. And I think as we look into this, you know, we can all say it's rubbed off on us. Where it's just a fundamental lack of understanding about cause and effect. We cause our own problems and then we're surprised about it. We're just becoming completely divorced as a society from cause and effect. You know, look at the way we respond to everything, you know, to COVID itself. UK and the US, 2/3 of adults are overweight or obese. So of course we're highly susceptible to health problems. So a disease comes through and we tell everybody to stay at home and do nothing. And we should have worked on, well, okay, what's the cause? Well, we're incredibly unhealthy. Our diet is terrible. Well, how can we fix that? In some ways, diet is an individual responsibility, maybe not something for a government to get into, but I mean, you look at how many diet problems are caused by the US government's corn subsidy and how they're incentivizing the creation of unhealthy food and feeding animals. You know, there's a lot of bad problems that are even being caused by the government. So there's more governments can do there, but no, we tell everybody to stay at home. We look at all the problems Mr. Joel Hilliker had a trumpet brief this week on, you know, this lack of manliness. And yes, we're all shocked by the lack of courage and the lack of manliness that we see around her. There's a shooting in Uvalde. There's a gunman in a room full of kids and the police do nothing for an hour. But we also caused that as a society. We spend years and years telling, you're trying to feminize boys and telling them, you know, not to be men. You had the Gillette razor ad trying to attack masculinity, telling people not to be manly, not to be courageous. And then we're surprised when people aren't courageous. And instead, when we try to deal with these problems, so much of dealing with the problems, we see society and the government doing more of the same thing that caused the problem in the first place. I mean, take inflation. You're having a lot of politicians now saying we need to deal with inflation by printing more money. Thoroughly divorced from cause and effect. You know, Georgia, they're dealing with high inflation by sending out stimulus checks. And to be fair to Georgia, they do have a rainy day fund. I think they also still have a lot of debt too. You know, now there's people pushing for the federal government to do the same thing, to follow Georgia, to send stimulus checks. We've got mass inflation, and so we want to print more money? You know, it makes no sense. And this refusal to deal with basic cause and effect, it gets right to the heart. Right to the heart of our message. You know, there are fundamental laws of cause and effect. Galatians 6 and verse 7 is just a critical scripture to think on. Actually, I've got it in my notes. I can just read it from there on this. But it says, "Be not deceived. God is not mocked. For whatsoever a man sows, that shall he also reap." And I think it's very easy to be very familiar with this verse. Again, it is basic common sense. But note, Paul begins that by saying, be not deceived. This is something that we can become deceived about. This is something that's very natural to become deceived about. Human nature wants to be deceived about this because human nature wants to believe that it can ignore laws of cause and effect and get away with it. We want to deceive ourselves about cause and effect. And often there's a delay in cause and effect. You know, the US has been printing money for years. But inflation did not skyrocket the minute the printing presses started rolling, or really the digital magic restarted creating dollars and using them to buy up government debt. You didn't get inflation that instant. And so people start to think, well, we got away with it. Maybe we don't need to worry about this causing this particular problem. And so then all of these experts concluded, well, we've been printing money for years. It's been fine. We can accelerate that process dramatically during COVID. It will still be fine. And they deceived themselves on this. It's fascinating. This is from the beginning, right from the start of Mr. Armstrong's landmark book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. But he says, he writes here, this world has been falsely educated to ignore causes and deal with effects. Right in the opening paragraphs, he gets straight into this when he's talking about the problems that beset our countries, why these countries are struggling. Well, it gets back to cause and effect. Yet all the world's problems and ills are simply a matter of cause and effect. There is a cause that has produced strife and war, poverty, wretchedness, inequality, crime, disease, mental ills, but leaders do not know. The Bible itself is a book of cause and effect. Note this quote. This is just a profound quote from Mr. Gerald Flurry. True education revolves around learning cause and effect. True education revolves around cause and effect. It's absolutely fundamental. It's absolutely fundamental to God's plan. You know, man is being allowed to learn from experience that there is a way that causes blessings, that is God's way and God's law, and there's a way that causes curses, and that is anything that is not God's way and God's law. That is man living his own way. In Mystery of the Ages, Mr. Armstrong wrote, God is letting the laws of cause and effect take full toll. Man's society, deceived and misled by Satan, has not yet even brought man to fully admit failure of his course of self-sufficiency. What I think is fascinating is the more deceived this world gets and the further this world gets from God and his law, the further it gets from basic cause and effect. And often the most educated, and we see this with the response to COVID and the response to inflation, the most educated are often the ones furthest away from just that basic understanding of cause and effect. They tend to think, well, you know, we can get around it. Normally, yes, printing money would cause inflation, but if we do this very clever thing and if we set it up in this very technical way, we can get around cause and effect. And that's the whole foundation of the medical industry in so many ways. But we need to understand that we live in a world where cause and effect are under attack, where this world is deceived about cause and effect. Because we ourselves can easily be deceived here. Human nature longs to deceive itself about cause and effect. You know, we can have problems easily inflicted on us by others, but we also cause our own problems at times. And we need to, I don't have time to turn there, but Haggai chapter 1 talks about consider your ways. Consider your ways. Okay, you're having problems. Are there things that you're doing to cause these problems? And we can think about this in so many different ways. You know, it's very easy. Human nature likes to say, well, I don't really need to Bible study today, or I can cut my Bible study short today, I can cut my prayer short today. It won't have any effect. But getting away from God does have effect. And we can think, okay, well, I did some Bible study, it wasn't as effective today. Is there a cause for that? Well, yeah, maybe I had my laptop open and I was distracted by these things popping up. And we can then think, okay, well, then let me eliminate the cause so I can have a better effect next time. It's something that, again, we live in a world that doesn't think that way, and that is moving away from cause and effect. But we need to understand absolutely that there are laws of cause and effect, that God's even whole plan of mankind for mankind right now revolves around learning from experience that they need God and that their way of life is what is causing all of these problems. Well, we are at about the end of the show and the end of this week. If you do want to order any of those materials and that Trumpet magazine that we mentioned, you can give us a call on that free phone number, 1-866-930-3024. All of that material is available on our website as well, thetrumpet.com. Please do email us. You can get in touch by emailing td@thetrumpet.com. Thanks for joining us today. Thanks for joining us all week. And we'll be back again on Monday.